Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This is the second Wednesday of our Vassa, of our range retreat. Settling down should have been done. The first inspiration and energy of having all this time to meditate is probably wearing off by now for some of you. But you have heard last week me talking a lot about the idea of letting go, doing things gently, about the teaching that was Sagaramana Karitawa Labati. Chitta ekagatang labhati samadhi, that a person has made this vasagra, this abandoning, this letting go, renunciation, relinquishing the main thing, they attain one pointedness of mind, they attain samadhi. And this idea of vasagra should be understood very well. It is a letting go of something. But as I was just returned from a teaching trip to Singapore, where I taught a retreat, I was teaching that that letting go should be done with passion, a passionate letting go, not a bored or insipid letting go. It was certainly the teaching of the Kuba Rajans which I saw, that whatever one was doing, one would have to put that 100% effort in whatever it was. If it was sweeping in the monastery, it had to be done properly. Put energy into it, put care into it, put mindfulness into it. When you were going on alms round, it wasn't a time for chit-chat or just watching the scenery or looking at the birds flitting through the trees. It was actually to walk on that alms round as a perfect, powerful, wonderful practice. See, whatever you had to do, you had to give so much to it. That was my training. And so when I came here and started building, I gave everything to that. When you go teaching, you give everything to it. And when you give a talk, you talk with passion, with energy, giving yourself fully to it. And this is how one should practice one's meditation as well. To actually to put energy and effort to meditate passionately. I don't mean with lust. I mean you really want to do this and you give it full energy. You know, stages of meditation which I teach. Sometimes what happens, you get to still states of mind, but your interest, your passion for that stage of meditation, if you like, is not strong enough. You're just half watching. The mindfulness isn't strong enough, so it just fades away. The mind wanders. It's not captivating. It doesn't captivate your mindfulness. So the mindfulness just drifts over here and drifts over there, just fades away. And sometimes you can waste so much time that way. So I was teaching people in Singapore to meditate passionately. In particular, I resurrected one of those stories from that book of mine about the Emperor's Three Questions. Now is the most important time. The one you're with is the most important person. The thing to do is to care. And using that for every stage of one's meditation, even if it's the present moment, whatever this moment is, to regard that deliberately. This is the most important moment in the world. This. To give this moment importance. If you give this moment importance, no matter what it is, if you really care about it, then of course you become alive in that moment. You become mindful. It's exactly the same technique which I use when people ask their questions from me, or I give them interviews, or I'm tired and I talk to them. It's something I've been practicing ever since I read that story over 30 years ago. 34 years ago or something. But giving importance to the person you were talking with was almost like a training. So that when I was watching my present moment, or the breath, or silence, or whatever, that was important to me. It's important what I was doing. So I did it with this extra energy, this passion, this care, this really putting yourself more fully into what's happening. But it wasn't with desire for something else. It wasn't trying to gain something. It wasn't trying to achieve anything. That's the desire and the craving which is the problem. But the desire and the craving which wants to put this energy into the moment, which does things as if this moment is just so vital. And of course, that's what the Buddha meant, to meditate like your turban's on fire, or like your clothes are on fire, as if that this is your last day on earth, in this life. And you've got to meditate tonight, because who knows what might happen in the morning, let alone in the morning, later on this evening. So we do this meditation with this great sense of passion in the moment. And again, sometimes we do need these ways of perceiving the way we meditate. Just little aspects, ways of looking, calls it skillful means, which you find does actually enhance and give that meditation more power. But I was playing around with that. This moment is the most important one in the world. The one you're with is the most important. The one you're with is the most important. The one you're with is the most important. Playing around with that perception when I was meditating. And you could see just you were putting in that energy into the moment. The mind was becoming alive to your meditation. You were watching the breath with electric mindfulness. Say electric mindfulness, just trying to find more words, synonyms, adjectives to say what I really mean. You're putting yourself really into this. So when you were watching the present moment, it was very easy to spot. It was very easy to keep there. Why? Because it was valuable, it was important, it was precious. You were watching the present moment with passion. If you just watch it with boredom, of course your mind will wander away. There's nothing to keep it there. There's nothing to interest it there. There's nothing to really hold it. We have to meditate with that degree of juice from our mind. When you start to get into this meditating passionately business, with this present moment when there's a silence, this amazing stillness of the mind, then it does not turn into a dullness. One of the problems with letting go is it can lead to the dull equanimity. And that dull equanimity where you don't really care can soon lead into the sloth and torpor, into the lack of mindfulness, where the mind doesn't really know what it's doing. Hours, days, range retreats, wassas, years of your monastic life can just pass by. And what have you been doing? Sort of meditating. But you haven't really been meditating with that power. So in every moment is important, is vital. And then when you start to look at your breath, this breath happening now is so important, it's so valuable. It's this one, not the next one, not the last one, not some other thing. Why is it the mind will wander away when you're trying to watch the breath? Why can't you see it fully? Because for you, in that moment, the breath isn't important. Other things are more important. Sleeping, fantasizing, planning, figuring out this, don't know what you're up to these days. But if this breath is really important to you, it's easy to watch. Whatever is vital, important, the mind will go on to that with ease. You can understand the way that our perceptual apparatus works. The mind, by its very nature, will choose to stay with those things which it thinks are important. The sound outside, which is disturbing you, only disturbs you because there's a choice there that this is more important than anything else you're doing. The aches and pains in the body, the thoughts in your mind, the plans, the memories, they only disturb one because we give them more importance than the other things we're doing. We all know many, many cases of lay people watching the TV. Darling, dinner's ready, they can't even hear. Or you're busy sort of reading a book and you can't even hear the telephone. Or sometimes people just busy just watching a movie and the burglars come into the house and steal from the same room where they're watching the TV. The mind, the perception, will not choose other than what it thinks is really important and valuable. So this is where one can help the meditation by deliberately giving importance, giving value to these stages of meditation which we talk about either in my books or in the Anapanasati Sutta. When you give importance to the breath, and of course your mindfulness stays there. It does not wander off. Even if there's a sound outside, this breath is important to me. The one you're with is the most important. The most important thing to do is to care about it. To be soft with it, to be kind with it. Not to try and force it to be anything different, but to fully appreciate it, to value it as it truly is. When you give importance to every moment like that in your meditation, you give importance to every stage of the meditation, I think you will understand just how easy it becomes to meditate and how this is what we mean by meditating passionately. You really get into it. The energy starts to build up. You can meditate for more hours because this is important. What's really important to you, you can spend hours doing. How many hours do you spend on like a project or reading a book? How many hours do you spend writing letters sometimes? And here, we're giving even more importance just to watching your breath. So check out when you're meditating. If you haven't got the deep meditations yet, are you really giving importance to the moment? Are you giving importance to the silence? Are you giving importance to the breath? If you're not giving enough importance, that is called meditating without passion. Not giving everything you've got. If you start doing it this way, you're giving the energy which will pull you into the deep meditations. Meditation is letting go, but letting go with energy. Those high meditations or deep meditations are high energy states. You're buzzing with energy. Why so often it happens that people can't sleep after good meditations. The energy is just too strong. So this is how we learn to let go with power. And of course this needs to have the discerning wisdom. One of the reasons I'm giving this talk to get people to understand, to be able to distinguish which particular letting go you're supposed to be doing. To let go of everything, you get nowhere. What you have to let go of is the desires and the cravings, the desire to do, to change, to get somewhere, to make something happen. You let go with full energy. You passionately let go. When this happens, then you're going on the path of the Buddha. You understand what the Iddhipadas are, but you also understand the Third Noble Truth. How to be content, how to abandon. Abandoning takes effort, you throw things away. Being content takes the energy of the mind. So actually to get right in there, chaga, means actually giving yourself to this meditation. You don't just half give yourself, you give yourself fully. Just like a person who's a generous person, they just don't give just a small amount. They just give the whole wallet, the whole bank account, give the whole lot. They give the shirt off their back. They give the blood in their body and the skin off their back too. They just will give everything. And that's what chaga also means. It's not just to give, not expecting anything back in return, which is my usual definition. It's this full, powerful, heroic giving. The full 100% complete contentment. It's just the total abandoning. You do it with this power, this force, this energy. And of course, this is when you do get into those calm states of mind. And in those calm states of mind, you have the energy to propel you further. Sometimes people get stuck at certain stages of meditation. And sometimes they ask, well, what am I doing wrong? Why do I only get to the breath or the beautiful breath? Why do I get to a nimitta? I can't go any further. And a lot of times it's because the energy in that mind state is not sufficient. I mentioned so many times that mental energy is the happiness, and the happiness is the cause of samadhi. So sometimes we need to build up that energy. This is why, you know, the Eightfold Path, where it says virya or samavayama, they say that in some of the suttas, they say that is the cause that does generate right mindfulness, that does generate samadhi. Those three things. I take the virya to be the happiness, just as samavayama will empower samadhi, just as right effort or energy so it creates that jhana. The same way sukhino cittang samadhiyati, the happiness creates the jhana as well. It's the happiness, the joy, the piti, that is coming from the energy. They run around each other. They dance together, energy and happiness of the mind. So one way to get that bright mind is to put forth energy into whatever one is doing. Especially energy into the meditation. This is important. It is the most important thing you can ever do. It's the best range retreat you've ever had. It's the only one you've got, no matter how many years you've been here. It's the only day. It's the only moment. Give it everything you've got. There are times in my monastic life, I remember, when you couldn't be lazy. You had to meditate. You had to meditate well. This is, I recall, just going to the north of Thailand. And I think my sixth range retreat, or just before my sixth range retreat, travelling all day from one monastery to another, from just after the alms food in the morning, left about 9 o'clock, walked about 3 or 4 hours in the sun, waited for a bus, cramped in the front seat of the bus, managed to get to the monastery which I was going to, just feeling really tired, really sweaty and dirty and hot, and just wanted to go and crash somewhere. And when I got to the monastery, they said, you're just in time, in half an hour, we're going to have our 4 hour sit in the evening. I did it every evening, in the hall, cross your legs, 4 hours, no moving. And of course, I realized if you're going to do things like that, when you're really, really tired, you've got to get your act together. I started meditating, I say, with passion. Really had to. This moment was important, because I know that if you get into your meditation quickly, if you really put that power in the first few minutes, then you're just having a great time. And of course, that's what I did. I just got really going in samadhi very quickly. And I always remember that I was upset because they rang the bell 15 minutes early. I felt cheated. We only had 3 hours and 3 quarters rather than the full 4. Could have gone on for much longer. This is why. Because I put power into that mindfulness. This really was important because I knew the suffering which would happen if I didn't. What about the suffering in your life if you can't get samadhi? The suffering if you don't make something of monastic life. The suffering if you don't get these beautiful joys which will free you from lust, from desires, ill will, which will give you a deeper meaning in life. The monastic life is important. The path is vital. This moment is precious. So we put forth the effort by noticing that this is precious. And I can see here the effort is not to attain anything. It's not to desire something, get somewhere, or get rid of. It's whatever you're experiencing now, in this, by giving it more importance, you're actually cutting off your desires, cutting off your cravings, cutting off your ill will, but also cutting off the lethargy, which sometimes happens when we meditate for a lot. So why the Buddha said in that one of those suttas, that if one is giving so much time to samadhi, one should pay attention to the three things, not just samadhi, but also creating energy and sometimes just a little bit of equanimity. It's not just letting go, it's putting in the energy and the power there. And there's many ways we can put in the power in every moment, every stage in the meditation. We can do reflections, say, on death, not knowing when we're going to go. We can do the reflections of the passing of time, just how quick the years go by. It's scary sometimes. So how many 10 days of this retreat have already gone? Over 10%? It's just a flash. Look at me, I just went away just a few moments ago and I'm back again. Some of that is, it's just a few moments. This is actually what life is like. So we can't afford to mess around. There's no time to muck around. We've just got to get our act together and meditate passionately. When you're walking is not just some sort of excursion like a tourist. It's not just like going for a stroll along your meditation path, you know, just watching the birds and looking at sort of some of the knots in the wooden and walking path, looking at some of the bricks and figuring out how you're going to build the next hut or whatever. It's not the purpose of walking meditation. Every step is important, is vital. It's almost like you're walking on a tightrope with no net underneath, strung high above the ground. One false step and you're going to be in trouble. Just like the Buddha's simile of the man with the bowl of oil on top of his head, filled to the brim, with one of the king's soldiers following behind with the instructions, if you spill just one drop of oil, then you'll cut your head off. Imagine what that would be like if I was following behind you with a sword. One thought of lust, and that would be it. Cut your organ off. You'd be very mindful. The thing is, what that's doing is not really from fear or not trying to get somewhere. It just makes the moment important. And too often, we sacrifice most of our lives because this moment is not that important. Next one, next time I'll do it. It's a great talk, I have a rest and I restart tomorrow morning. The next moment's important. Yeah, get all my chores done. This is a week when I've got to do my chores in the monastery. When I'm upatak, get this out of the way and then I'll meditate. Never think like that. No matter what you have to do, no matter what chores you're in, now, in this moment, no matter what chores you're doing, there's still plenty of hours in every day to meditate. Even for me, and to do the most work in a monastery, there's still plenty of hours when I can meditate. When I can walk, when I can sit, but I don't waste them. Every moment counts. When you do that, you understand what passion is in one's meditation. And of course you feel this rising energy inside of you. You are establishing, rousing energy inside your mind. And it's not the negative energy from desire. It's the energy which goes into a moment, a place where desire and ill will cannot live. They cannot exist in the now. It's only when that desire can have a space to move into the future, when ill will has a space to move into the past, when there's no space for those two things to move. They're stuck, they can't, they're like being in a prison, the prison of the present moment. It's a freedom for the meditator. There's a prison for desire and ill will. So you put your energies into this and there's no danger there. You don't get tense. You don't get frustrated. You just get empowered. And of course this is how one gains those deep states. One watches the present moment. One silence comes and it's a powerful silence, not a dull one. It's like the brightness on the TV is just increased. The same program, but there's more power to the screen. When you start watching the breaths, every breath is vital. So you can see everyone with ease. Every moment of the breath is vital. You can't afford to lose any moment. You know that story when I was in first year in Watnanachat, no sala, no mosquito repellent, no mosquito coils. I'm just getting bitten to death by these mosquitoes. Every evening Ajahn Chah would sit outside at that time of night, just at dusk when the sun came down, when all the mosquitoes come out of those forests. And I'm telling you, this is no exaggeration, there were more mosquitoes then than there are now. And they were just so hard to bear. But I knew you had to meditate properly. I did that because I knew what happened if I was sloppy, if I didn't put forth this energy and importance to every moment. If I wandered from my breath, it wouldn't wander to some sort of romantic fantasy or some plans of what I was going to do later. Every time my mind would wander, it wandered to being bitten by mosquitoes, and it was just unendurable sometimes. That's sometimes why the Kuba Rajan do use that torture, they call it Toroman. Because they want to make it vital, get you really going. Put forth energy and effort into the moment, but not into achieving. Just into the moment. And that's why they did this. And of course, you got really nice samadhi from that. You thank those mosquitoes afterwards for just keeping you on the edge. The edge between the past and the future. Keeping you on the edge between desire and your will, where neither could get to you. Keeping you on that edge, that opening into samadhi. And of course, this is what you did many other times as well. The stories of those monasteries in Laos, where the monks would have to walk all day. And when they come in the evening, they had these huge platforms high in the trees. And the abbot would force his monks onto these little platforms, just the size of your sitting cross. Take the ladder away. There's no way down. Just to meditate there all night. And those had to meditate there. They had to get their act together. Otherwise, any stop and torpor, you'd fall off and die. I knew one of those monks. He said, it's amazing that no one usually died. Or maybe they covered it up if anyone did die, but many got really good samadhi. Because it was important. It was vital. They gave the energy into the moment. They meditated with passion, as you would do if you're sitting on the edge of a great precipice. So this is how we do that meditation. And it doesn't actually have any bad side effects. It's just we get alive, we get energized, we get happy. And when we get to the nimittas, those nimittas, when they come up, they're already very bright and very beautiful. I told you before about the nature of nimittas, why they're nimittas, and actually what their qualities are. Their stability is the amount you can let go and not control, but their brightness is the energy of your mind. And sometimes the people, even monks, they get nimittas coming up, but they're dull nimittas. If they're dirty nimittas, that's because of bad precepts. But the dull ones means there's not enough energy there. Sometimes say, look at the bright place in the middle, but sometimes that's not enough because there's still not enough energy going on. Just too sloppy. Not putting enough passion, enough importance, enough vitality. I remember one of the great meditations I got was actually on my birthday after my fourth range, I think it was. I decided to give up tea and caffeine for that range retreat. I remember it was Ajahn Prabhakara was the abbot then. And in the morning he gave me a thermos of milk tea. Because it was my birthday. It was my birthday a few days ago. This is why I remember this. And he gave me this, and I think I had a cup of tea, special cup of tea in the afternoon. Because of my birthday. We sat all night that night. That was a great night's meditation. It was one of my most memorable ones. It's because you had that power. Okay, it was some caffeine or whatever, but you can get that same power just through the energy of putting importance and vitality into whatever you're doing, especially when you're meditating. Every moment is crucial, it counts, it's vital. You know that old saying that people ride fast motorbikes because it keeps them alive? They have to be alert. They have to be right on top of things. And they get this mindfulness, almost like power mindfulness. Their energy gives them a high. Why people do extreme sports, dangerous things. Here in this monastery, we can do it just through sheer wisdom power. Everything we do, we give it everything we've got. Every moment of meditation is vital. Every step on that walking meditation path is the most important step you've ever made in your life. Full mindfulness comes to what you're doing. How do you expect your mind to stray? Full mindfulness comes to just every movement in the feet. It's important. It's almost like you're walking on glass, or you're walking at night, where there might be snakes or ants or scorpion centipedes around. You're very alert, because you're putting energy into the moment. And when those nimittas do arise, as a result, you've got the power, you've got the energy. And sometimes when they do arise like that, it's not the dull nimittas, they're the beautiful nimittas. Sometimes it gets so strong, you just can't help yourself but get into jhanas. Because they're so strong, they just pull you right in. They're powered. The brilliance, the brilliance, the beauty, the strength is so strong that the fear and excitement just get overwhelmed. So sometimes how lay people get into these things. You know, I've often told you that, you know, one of those things I've been trying to discover, why is it that sometimes some lay people get nimittas and get into jhanas even, while monks don't? I think it's because monks get sloppy. They can meditate any old time. Ah, maybe I'll meditate now, maybe I'll meditate tomorrow. When it's my retreat, then I'll really get into it. Now, maybe this range retreat I'm going to learn my chanting, and the next retreat I'll really get into it. This is my Patimokkha time. And next year I'll get into it. And, you know, maybe I'll just clean up my heart first of all, then I'll meditate. It's always a sloppy attitude sometimes. Imagine what it's like being a lay person doing a 9-day retreat. That's the only time they've got. There isn't a chance later on, even one retreat period. Sometimes it's so hard to get into these retreats. They may not be able, even if they have the time off, they have the money, they may be not able to get in the retreat. So this moment counts for them. I think they put more energy into the moment. It's more vital, it's more important. Perhaps that's why they get these better states of meditation than some monks. They get nimittas coming up and they're powerful. And they go blissing away and they come crying to you. Oh, Ajahn Brahm, what's going on? This, some monks come like that and cry to you, but they're very few. I wonder why. I think it's because not enough importance, passion, going in to the meditation, to actual practice. And of course, that when one gets those jhanas coming up, this is so important for the path. It's so important for your monastic life. I've told many of you that the only reason why people leave the monastery, they leave monastic life and disrobe, is because of lust. And the only way to overcome lust, according to the Buddha, a supa doesn't do it. It just, you know, stops it temporarily. It's like a shield. But it's not good enough. To really overcome it, you do need the jhanas. That happiness which is so much better than sex, which and romance and food and physical comfort. This is actually that jhanas, the Buddha said, is what will overcome, suppress, beat down the lust, the desire, sensory desire and all that sort of stuff. It's important to have this. Otherwise you'll be tortured as a monk. You see some pretty girl come to bring you some dana. You know, in the line, in the arms round line. And all your super in the world won't work. But if you have the joy and the bliss of the mind, and you just had a jhana or come really close, you don't care about girls, anybody. You've got this great happiness inside, the power of the mind. So it's important. to keep you as monks, novices, anagarikas. But it's also important as this beautiful gold mine of wisdom. Basically, before you get jhanas, you don't really know what you're doing, what you're talking about when it comes to Dhamma. That's what I say. Because you haven't really let go of anything, really much. You haven't sort of seen things ceasing, seen things going, some real understanding of what this mind is, what this citta truly is. You can argue all the time about amita citta or other jittas, but what's the point of doing that? Of even sort of thinking, you know, which teaching is right, which teaching is wrong. Find out what that citta is, first of all. Experience it. Get a few jhanas under your belt. Real solid experience of these things. Put energy and power. This is important stuff. Get a few memories of your past lives. Stop messing around. And then when you start doing this, then you really get true insights. I've often noticed in the suttas, they've got something called the Tewija, the threefold knowledge. First is remembering past lives, then recording your karma, or understanding karma. At least the most of it anyway, not all of it obviously. And then lastly, breaking the asavas, the outflowings of the mind. In other words, becoming enlightened. I'm thinking one of those suttas the Buddha called out the three breaking throughs of the chicken out of the chick out of its egg. And in my book on Deep Insight, I call those the three great insights. I use that for the word insight, avijja, a knowledge, an understanding, a breakthrough. It's giving it more importance that that was a path which the Buddha took to become enlightened. He used the power of samadhi, got past life memories first of all. That was crucial to his path, I say. And the text seems to say so too. And understanding karma, and then letting go of the whole lot through the experience of enlightenment, understanding Four Noble Truths. So why can't we do this? You obviously do need jhanas for past life memories. You do need that degree of power to be able to understand karma. These are no simple things. Obviously, it's a rebirth, and karma, you're understanding dependent origination. That's the workings of karma, how karma and craving just propel you from life to life without a self, without an abiding entity called you. That's the truth of things. That's the way this thing we call life keeps on going. And it's important to see that, and to understand it deeply. You can't do that without samadhi. You can't do that with the power, mindfulness, and the data which samadhi gives you. So you really get into this. In the time of the Buddha, sometimes people became enlightened so quickly because they put forth effort into what they were doing. Sammāvāyāma is as important to the Eightfold Path as is sammāditthi or sammāsamādhi. The right effort, number 6 in the Eightfold Path, is also vital. You know, I've said that many times just to make it quite clear why jhanas is essential, because if one of those factors of the Eightfold Path wasn't absolutely necessary, the Buddha would not have put him in there. He'd have had a Sevenfold Path, or a Sixfold Path, or a Twofold Path, or whatever. It is because every factor of that Eightfold Path, as any noble one would tell you, you read it for yourself if you like. Every one of those factors is vital. And even Sammāvāyāma is vital as well. Right effort, right energy. So if you're meditating and you're taking those teachings of letting go, meaning you just sit there and just no energy, just dull, dozy, not sure what's going on, you're missing the point of what letting go is. You're letting go of desire and craving, but you're not letting go of energy. In fact, you're cultivating energy. You can do it by the sense of importance to what you're doing right now. This moment is important. This moment being important means you don't abandon it for something else. This moment being important gives rise to this contentment, this powerful contentment. You just want to be here. This is it. And that contentment, as I keep saying, that builds up its power. It's contentment which keeps you still. It's contentment which is the wall between you and the cravings. It's the contentment which we build it up more and more and more, starts to see the energies of the mind become still, but powerfully still. And when this happens, the meditation just takes off. It is also the case that nimittas come out much quicker when you've got power and energy. Again, some monks can get to the stage of a beautiful breath, everything is so still. They're at peace, but there's no nimittas coming up. And someone says, well, what's happening? Where's these nimittas that Ajahn Brahm keeps talking about? One of the reasons they're not coming up, your energy is too low. There's not enough power in your samadhi. There's not enough brightness there. The wattage is too low. So you've got to increase that wattage. Whatever you do, everything you've got, every breath, you give it full mindfulness. This breath happening now, the most important, literally, ever. And every moment's like that, you can understand how the energy of the mind starts to rise. And then when the five senses do become quelled, the mind is so strong anyway, it comes up, the nimitta comes up really early. Sometimes you're just watching the breath and it just comes up. You just let the breath go, you just got a nice nimitta. Go for it, if it's stable enough. Sometimes you don't even need to do the breath meditation. Sometimes the nimitta's right there because you've just had a powerful meditation just recently. And the mind is so empowered, so energized. You just have to close your eyes and the nimitta's there. Sometimes there's so much energy even with your eyes open. The nimitta is there. The mind is empowered. The strength of the mind is greater than any of the strength of the five senses. Even the five senses combined is no match for the power of the mind after a deep meditation. That's why nimittas sustain themselves even in with your eyes open. So this is actually understand how the energies go into the mind. When you have that degree of energy, the power after that jhana is finished, you've got huge types of energies in the mind. If you just ask, what's my earliest memory? You understand with power, you've just got this super V8 or V10 or V12 sports car of a mind. You can do whatever you want, then zoom over there and just get it for you. If you want even psychic powers, you've got the energy to do so. But also, if you want to find the beautiful truths of the Buddha, enlightenment, and unlock the secret of suffering, and become an Arya, or even a non-returner, or even maybe an Arahat in this life, or in this retreat, why not go for it? You need the power for that. Slack people can't get those things. And that's how you gain that power. Every moment is so important. This moment now, the most vital. Mindfulness starts to rise to the occasion. And you feel these energies through your body. You're vibrating, you're powerful, you feel powerful. It's so much better than just feeling dull and dozy and dragging your way through this monastery. Dragging yourself through this retreat, going to bed early, getting up late. That's actually what happened in the prisons when I was teaching in the jails. The prisoners, I think it was at Karnak, this is where they first told me, and I heard it from the other prisoners in other jails as well. They used to say 1 hour more sleep is 1 hour of your sentence. 1 hour less you have to serve in jail if you have one more extra hour of sleep. And that's what they were doing. They were sleeping so much, those prisoners. In Karnak, they would have a job to be done. They'd try and get the cushy numbers, cushy jobs, you can just get done in 1 or 2 hours in the morning. And then many of the prisoners just sleep so much. And they get into this dullness, this deadness, not alive at all. No happiness either, just miserable bunch, the ones who slept a lot. Just depressed. Don't be like that in this retreat. Don't think all this, I don't know how many days there are to go. Don't even think how many days are gone. Just this moment now. This is the important one. This breath happening now is the most important. That way you just get this energy, and the meditation retreat becomes so much more enjoyable. Not only enjoyable, but more fruitful. You actually do get some places. Because you put effort into every moment, into whatever you do. It has to be a kind effort, a compassionate effort, a gentle effort, but this gentle giant of a force. By gentle, I mean there's no like recriminations. Oh, that didn't work. This is going off into the past. You know, getting into ill will, getting into desire. Please know those as your enemies. Keep watch on those things. You've heard it so many times. Don't be stupid. When you see any desire coming up for something in the future, knock it on the head straight away. Don't mess around. When you start to see thoughts go off into a fantasy or a dream, knock it on the head. This is important, this retreat. It's important to meditate. It's important to get enlightened. Just knock them on their head straight away. Be sort of the firm practitioner, the sharp one. This is important, this moment, this time. You find you just become a very skillful meditator. You become free of those things. You're really taking the bull by the horns. You're a forest monk. Not just a sleepy pig of a monk, as the Kuba Ajahn would say. Be a pig of a monk, or a pig of a novice, or a pig of an anagarika, or a pig of a layman visiting here, or a pig of a laywoman visiting here. It means you just lie on your side all the time. Eventually you go oink oink as you snore. So put effort and energy into this. And then you feel just alive. The mindfulness is strong and becomes full. And the happiness starts to roll into your practice. And you can just watch this breath. You can see it be a beautiful breath. You can see nimittas coming up, strong ones, brilliant ones, with ease. And those are the ones who take you into the jhanas. And you bliss yourself out, empower yourself. And you get all these great insights. Seeing the nature of things, you've got a mind powerful enough to do so. And just realize just how just dull human beings usually are. What the Buddha meant by little dust in their eyes. What it meant with no dust in their eyes. Or little dust in their eyes, or a lot of dust. A lot of dust means like this grime, which is grime and dust, like on a windscreen. You know, going out in the car. Come back today, the windscreen was quite clear because it's been raining. But you know what it's like when you go out in a car and the windscreen hasn't been washed? You can't see things clearly, it's all dirty. But this is when you have that clear windscreen, you can see, everything is so sharp. Especially if it's illuminated in midday by the sun. This is what happens with the mind. The mind which is empowered, cleaned of the dust. Then you can see the Dhamma. And you can see what the Buddha meant by all these teachings. Before then, it's just you're not ready for it. It's okay to read the suttas, it's okay to try and find out about the Dhamma, but my goodness, you need to have the power of jhana, first of all, to really get into it. So get into this meditation. Every moment is important. This you're experiencing now is the most important thing in your whole life. This evening is the most vital. This hour, this breath, the only one I have. So I'm going to really watch it fully. Not wanting to be anything different, but fully watching it. Then you'll find you know how to meditate. And then this meditation retreat will be one of success for you. You will have bliss. You will start crying. You will start experiencing deeper dharmas than you've ever known before. Who knows, you may be another Aryan in this monastery. So go for it. Don't mess around. That's the talk for this evening.
Sūpatthipanno bhagavato.